Thank you, sir. Including flying into the rural areas, Chairperson. Manager HR. We just got joined by our shareholder aviation portfolio specialist who's managing the aviation portfolio within the DPE, Monde Mumeya, who will from time to time may come in terms of answering some of the questions. Correct. We tendered an apology this morning for our CEO, Ms. Siza Mzimela, and we will also then tender an apology for our chairperson of the board for not being here. As we said this morning that unfortunately there is a special audit meeting. It's our year end, so Siza was required to be at that meeting. We sincerely apologize for that. Thank you, Chair. Chair, you're quite... Thank you, Chair. Yeah. You're quite right, Chair, that we were both here present during the presentation by our colleagues from both Eskom and Transnet. We had the benefit of taking into consideration the your remark in the morning around the specific issues, that the whole purpose of the session is to look at the NGP targets as presented previously by the various SOEs during the last meeting in Feb. And therefore, based on that, we will move straight into the actual numbers in terms of what we've achieved post the last presentation. But just to do that, I think it's important for one to highlight that the 2011-2014 corporate plan is geared towards the NGP targets. One of the highlights that we have both from an SAA and Mango side is that we're planning a substantial growth over the next 3 years. We're planning new routes. The reason why I'm highlighting this new routes that we're planning, the creation of employment within SAA is supported by the ability to start new frequencies and start new routes. Hence, we're just highlighting that we're obviously starting seven routes planned for the African route. We've planned one for China. We're planning five for our cargo division. And obviously, Mango is looking at regional growth. I'm going to move directly, as I said, to the actual numbers so that the focus of the presentation will be basically around the numbers, which is this slide that basically talks about our dashboard in terms of what we presented previously and how what we've achieved to date. I'm going to hand over to my colleague to just deal with that part of the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. As we look at the slide here just gives us a summary of
our commitments to the new growth program. We've created a dashboard. We indicated all the divisions within SAA, including subsidiaries, and the total number of employees as at the end of May is 10,057, as indicated there. We've made a commitment of 86 internships through this financial year. The most important point that I wanted to highlight as well, Chair, is that we've aligned our new growth path to our financial year. When we presented our targets in February, it was based on a calendar year. And our compact and corporate plan with the shareholder is based on a financial year. So we've aligned that, but it doesn't significantly change our numbers. Our internships that we committed for this financial year is 86. We so far have 5. This is our third month into the new financial year. We are committed, and we will ensure that we meet the targets. Our apprentices, we've committed to 105, and we are on 41 year to date. The cadet pilots, we've committed to 47. We haven't engaged anyone yet. We're going to be starting in July to start engaging the cadet pilots. That's why we have a year to date of zero there. We'll go into detail later on. Direct jobs, we've committed to 529, and so far we are on 122. As I said, it was as at the end of May. So we will have the latest set as at June and going into July.
Just before Tuli proceeds there, I think one of the highlights there is that the 122 number, we, from a subsidiary level, Airshaft, you'll see that we had a commitment of 69. We have about 68 new employees starting going live this Friday, subsequent to the presentation, basically. So that would take the number of 122 to about 190. And if I was just to do a breakdown of that, is that 12 of those employees have been employed in the Bloemfontein area, 22 Gauteng, 34 in Durban. That's for our subsidiary chef.
Thank you. Our internships, we're already providing good opportunities for tertiary students across the group, in particular the students in who're studying tourism in our higher education institutions. Our commitment for 2011-2012 is 86, as indicated, and then we have 83 for 2012 and 2013, 85 for 2013 and 2014. That will give us a total of 254 internships total. Our apprentices focus mainly at SAA Technical, and our planning here is for the next 5 years. Our commitment in this current financial year, 11-12, is 105, and we can take up, our facility can take up an additional 45 if we can get a fund from the New Skills Fund. As it was also discussed earlier on, we are in negotiations to get assistance of the New Skills Fund, and that will bring us up to 150 for this financial year. And as indicated, another 150 in the 2012-2013, and 100 in 2013-2014, and 115 from 2014 to 2016. Our total commitment will be 535 without the additional amount. With the additional amount, we could get another 215 if we get funding for it. Cadet pilots, we have committed to 47, and this 47 comprises of 28 who are at internships at our feeder airlines, including the Red Cross. The 11 have completed the training program but are not yet placed on the internship. These people have been trained on the SAA cadetship program. As you know, once they've been trained, they cannot come and become commercial pilots immediately. So they need to go to our feeder airlines so where they can get hours and get the experience so that in the end, when they are ready, they can become first officers at SAA. So the 28 and the 11 have been trained by SAA. And these are the people that we're going to get back and place back into SAA. We have an additional 8 that we committed to. on an African aviation training initiative. This is a joint venture with South African Air Force. However, this is currently on hold. There's a change in leadership at the Air Force, and with any change in leadership, I suppose they're giving themselves time to understand and also question some of the commitments that were done with the Air Force. So we are still very open. When they are ready, we will take the eight because we have committed to the eight. What we have planned is we've now launched the cadet program and the bursary scheme. We are looking for some of our internal employees who have done their own self-development and paid for their flying lessons. We set up a criteria. We will employ some of them, and we're also looking at externally. We're going to be sending the advert in the national newspaper to also and try and offer bursaries to some of our employees externally who've demonstrated the commitment by putting their own money for training. Then we will offer them bursaries. So even if the ATI doesn't happen this year, the bursary scheme will happen within this financial year, and we're targeting 10 for the bursary scheme. In terms of direct jobs, we have committed for 529 in this financial year and 531 and for 2012-2013, 2013-2014, 555. Overall, in the next 3 years, we've committed to 1,615. Our process of creating jobs, as indicated by my colleague earlier on, is dependent on our growth in terms of our new routes that we're anticipating. And if we, for example, like air chefs, we get external customers for air chefs and we grow SA Technical as well, we will be able to increase jobs. We operate in a very, very competitive environment, and it becomes very difficult for us to create targets that we know realistically we won't be able to meet. And our presentation ends here. As far as the question that have been asked, as Chair had indicated, that let's just answer some of the questions before they are asked, because we know they are coming. As far as the aspect of rural skills development in rural areas is concerned, is we our offices are not based in rural environment. However, our Vulindlela project, which is creation of aviation awareness, is continuing in all the rural areas. And to record, of these cadets that we indicated, the 28 and the 11th cadet pilots that were trained at SAA, a majority of them come from the Eastern Cape and from Limpopo. That just shows the success that we've had from the rural areas. We will try to plan for the next time we come here to put a plan in place that will directly address that. But the challenge that we're facing is we don't have offices in the rural areas. And the question of flying to rural areas, as the Chair knows and Honourable Member know, that commercial flying is a very competitive a business and a very risky risky business. Do you want to add something, Jim?
I think just to add one thing that I know that we'll definitely get a question around, it is the challenges around SAA. So I think one of the challenges that we have, you know, as we all know, that SAA's strategies around the African continent is that we find ourselves having a challenge around the open sky market, you know, in terms of the Africa as a whole, that we don't find it easy to find frequencies, to find routes being granted, which impacts on our ability to create employment. We are obviously continuously lobbying our government in terms of participating in a program of ensuring that we get to a stage where some of the African countries are able to open the skies. That would enable us to be able to then create employment. We do find also that the introduction of the travel visa issue also that impact on our market because, you know, instead of passengers flying via South Africa because of the transit visa, they decide to then fly directly. So those are some of the challenges that we look at as a business, but we obviously, it's not challenges that we don't look at without looking at ways in terms of which we can improve on our business and find a way in terms of which we can create employment within the business. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's a very brief but very impressive and systematic presentation. I've identified 7 points here. Perhaps I would cut them into. I would ask all 7 of them, but perhaps we'll just say I must ask half now. Yeah. Number one, the new skills fund. We've just heard from Transnet that they're also struggling to access money there. What would be the hitch, particularly? Why would you struggle to get the Access funding from the New Skills Fund? That's the first one. The second one is the training itself, two parts. Training, how long does it take to train, that's an average training time for a cadet, number one. Number two, how much does it cost to train such a pilot? Of course, you have eloquently stated that after training them, you don't immediately absorb them, you take them elsewhere for experience and further training, etc. So I understand that. But I also know, how long does it take to train an average? No, not an average. What's an average time of training a pilot? Number one, number two, how much does it cost? Now, question four would be, the veteran pilots, and here I'm thinking of the MK and APLA people and so on. I know some of them were working, they got absorbed into SAE and so on. I don't know how many of them are still around, or perhaps some of them might be old and then not out of the system, but I'd like to know if there was a deliberate strategy to to place them in SAE. And following from there would be the veteran, the retired ones. The first one is the retired, the veteran one. The second one is the retired ones, really meaning from the old Air Force, SAA Air Force. So there were top class people there. As you know, SAA has been busy. I mean, the military has done a very wonderful job in training the Air Force personnel. Now, when they retire, is there a strategy of calling them to establish a consultative forum which will then act as an incubator for these trainee cadets? Because they've got the fund of knowledge, you know, so they can mentor these guys, take over from your formal training and then to incubate them further, so as to enrich them from the experience. It would be very nice to tell them all these, to regale them with stories of the ex-capis they had in olden days of aviation and so on. Yeah, to create more fascination. It's a question, but subsumed in that it's also a suggestion. The last one, Chairperson, the FTA, the free trade area. I hear you saying that you're struggling to open the skies and so on, but you're aware now that there is this corridor, this FTA now, between Cape Town and Cairo, which has been opened by, it's a memorandum of understanding, by 26 countries, SADC, COMESA, and the Western part, in order to have Eastern part economic block, in order to establish a transcontinental free trading area, which I assume will obviously have the benefits of enabling, you know, you to open those skies and circumvent the normal, you know, strictures that were there before, or territorial strictures that you cannot fly, there could be no flying area, zone area, etc., etc. That's a new thing that happened about 2 weeks ago, I think you're aware of it. Ministers of training, industry of 26 countries come together to make this kind of memorandum in order to liberalize the trading areas. And I assume also the skies would be open as well. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I just went back in my notes in February at the strategic planning workshop. We were told that the total number of employees, correct me if I'm wrong, in SAA is 13,500. Now, today you tell us the total employees is 10,057. I just want to know whether I took made a wrong note here or whether you had a reduction in total personnel, employees, total employees from February to June. That's the first point I make, because at that time your new CEO said to us that there are 1,290 vacancies that existed in February. I don't see the vacancies here, so maybe you can just, as a first question, just address that. Also, on your total employees, it was given to us in the next 5 years, 4 years, to 2015. You want to create 1,065 new jobs. I just need to find an update on what, how many new jobs you want to create. My second question is on your joint venture with SAAF. There used to be a problem between yourselves and SAAF, South African Air Force, because they have critical shortages, highly skilled, highly trained Air Force pilots, jet fighter pilots. And I remember for a long time they bitterly complained that you pinched, so-called, some of their pilots, which leaves a huge deficit on that side, but to your benefit. And if I read you say there's a joint venture between yourselves and SAAF, then I just want to find out whether you came to a common understanding you will not poach from one another, scarcely skilled, trained pilots. It's strange for me that it's on hold because there's a change in SANDF leadership. General Chokey took over, but as far as I know, the chief of the South African Air Force has not been replaced. So I'm not sure which change in leadership referring. Is it SANDF or is it South African Air Force? That is the second question. In a previous submission, and I can't find the date, one of your challenges was and I'm on your second last page, where you talk SAA operations. If I understand correctly, in total, direct jobs, you have cabin crew 168. That's a current year. And I don't know what you call your ground crew, whether it's airport operations or flight operations. I'm not sure. You need to explain to me. But it was said to us that one of the challenges you faced regarding service delivery and training was that your ground crew were not necessarily at the airports permanent employees. Many were fixed-term contracts or whatever terminology. Whether you sorted that problem out since we last spoke in three months ago. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think a few easy ones. SAA has got an additional enrollment capability of about that number, which totals to 250. I just want to understand how does that capability emerge if there is no funding that can enable the entity to carry on with that. secondly, linked to that, One would, I think it was mentioned by the Honourable Member Mugwena, that sitters are accumulating to billions of rands. What difficulty are you experiencing in accessing the sitter funding, which would take care of especially that area that you are complaining about? The other one is that the cadet pilot scheme, is said to have been launched in May, but on the commitments, there are training programs that cannot be placed on internship. One would want to understand what is the reason for that, any particular reason for that. On the very same slide, forgive me for my ignorance on this one, the joint venture between South African Airways and the Air Force, that partnership has not yet materialized. And I just want to understand what you say about substituting the aid through awarding 10 bursaries to 10. No, 10 bursaries to employees and enable them to complete their qualifications. No, I read it wrong. I withdraw that question. I thought we were talking about two figures. And I wanted to check now why two people. Okay, the last one is about direct jobs. 2011-2012, 122 direct jobs have been created across the group. Quickly want to understand, how do you arrive at that number across the group? Thank you very much. Not in finer detail.
Thank you, Chair. I will start at the end of the question from Honourable Member of what makes up the 122. The 122 is made up. The 122 is a slide that says NGP dashboard for 2012-2011. It's the jobs that we've created in SAA Commercial. We've created 9. Operations, we've created 53. This one that says NGP. Is cadet pilots. We launched in May, and you are asking us, we've made a commitment of the cadet pilots of 47, including this 11 that's not being placed, however, that's been trained. The question is, how come they're not being placed? There is a limitation in terms of our feeder airline on the number of cadet pilots that they can take at a time. So currently, that they have no placing because it's only SA Express, SA Link, and also the Red Cross that can take the cadet pilots. And it takes about 2 years for them to accumulate the number of hours that's required for them to transition into the commercial airline like SAA. So that's why you will have that 11 that's not placed yet. However, the plan that we've got at the moment is with those 11, we're going to have Flight Ops Department is working on a bridging course of accelerating their development. We now have Mango, and we're going to be using Mango also as a feeder airline to give exposure to those cadets that are not employed. So our pool is becoming slightly bigger with Mango. And as Mango gets into new routes, we'll also have opportunities of placing those people as trainees in Mango as well. And as the people move out of the feeder airlines into SAA, we place others. But there's only a limit number of airlines that we can use. We can't use BA, Kulula, we're limited. CTAS and access to funding. We have challenges into access to funding in CETA. They prioritize what they call the critical skills per year. And sometimes it's not done in consultation with all the entities. And if they for example, if this year they're not prioritize the training of pilots, if we want to engage the pilots and they have not prioritized it, we are unlikely to be getting an additional grant for pilots. So we are engaging them as we are one of the stakeholders. Our CETA is a TETA one, is a transport one, engaging them to say that we have a specific need in our industry that we need to be to aligning with our new growth path for us to get the funding. The other question which was asked by honorable member of what is the problem with the new skills fund, the problem that we experience is there's no clear criteria and funding allocated to the different sectors, whereas it's easier for the CETA. There's a transport CETA, there's a retail and wholesale CETA, there's a services CETA, they've allocated. With the new skills fund, our challenge from where we see it is that there's no it's not structured, and the funding is not allocated entirely according to the industries. But however, we are working together with our shareholder. The last meeting that we had with the shareholder, our chair of the board was actually going to be engaging the shareholder to assist us so that if we want to participate actively, we then need to access those funds. Yes, I'm glad that the shareholder is represented. As far as the additional capability that we have a huge facility of training at our SAA Technical. We only train the people that's budgeted for that we're able to allocate. However, we have capacity, we'll require more funding for us to train more. You know, with the example that an ESCOM and Transnet says they want to train for the economy, we are able to, as to the extent of that we've indicated, but we cannot do that without funding. Because then we don't have the funds to train them because it's expensive to train technicians and also won't be able to absorb them. So if we get the funding, we can even be able to work with DINEL. We actually had a meeting with DINEL to try and form a partnership to say, if we can train excess technicians, will they be able to accommodate them? But the funding is still a problem. But we do have a facility to train more. The question of grounds.
No, I was saying the CETA is a solution. So the shareholders should be
Madam. Thank you very much for bringing that to our attention. However, we've been engaging with the CETOs and through our various SOEs. With regards to basically like what SAA just said right now regarding cooperation between SAA, Dunel, and SAA Express, as a shareholder, we felt that most of these are basically involved in aviation. There's so much synergy that can happen there. With regards to basically having a pool of technician skills or a school of excellence that needs to be drawn about, whereby all these SOEs involved in aviation can have some ways of, because right now the issue that we've been having right now for us not to get the funding as well, because we all operate in silos, and need to go as a joint group, as an aviation sector in the Department of Public Enterprises, and going to all the CETAs and different, or the new, or the employment fund, which is held at the DTI. We as a shareholder, as Thomas always said, we will basically lead that in the front and see what can happen from that side. Engagements have been held at a high level, I think ministerial, with regards to us getting funding from DTI, especially the Employment Growth Fund. And I think maybe in future we'll get some feedback on that as well, how far it is at the moment. But there have been engagement on that level as well, because there's a key importance that it does materialize, because there's no need of us having funds, because it just were created to be an avenue of us creating jobs and skills. And I think the CETA issue is not only just linked to the transport of the CETAs. I think it's just broad throughout all the CETAs. There's a challenge regarding access of funding and how the funding is basically allocated. So I think the issue here is even bigger than just the Department of Public Enterprises as well.
Thanks, Chair, the Honourable Man. I think what we could commit to is that this has been an issue which has got attention of the different ministries within both the economic and the infrastructure clusters. In the agenda of the economic cluster for this coming Thursday, particularly is around how to unlock the blockages so that we can then be able to accelerate the issue of skills, issue of access to funding for these aspects. And I was saying that that bilaterals which we're dealing with, not only for ESCOM, not only for Transnet, but it's across the whole value chain, so that we can then be able to say that issue, if we want to prioritize skills, we need to be able to take it at that level. And I think that is an issue which we're going to look into.
Sorry, just one addition on the National Skills Fund. In the past, we have found it very difficult to access funding. And what is clear now is that higher education and training is actively trying to troubleshoot some of those blockages. For example, in the past, if you wanted to build a training facility, you couldn't get money from the training from the National Skills Fund. For physical infrastructure, for the actual training, you could get money, but not for physical infrastructure. That's now changing, and so that's why we are hopeful that Transnet and ESCOM will be able to get some supplementary funding for their facilities. But and that's over and above the national skills. I mean the CETA funding, obviously, and the training funding that Monde was talking about, around the Employment Creation Fund under DTI. So they're separate. They're all separate. Thanks.
My apologies. Of the ground staff being fixed-term contractors and how we're solving the problem, in the last financial year, we converted 692 fixed-term contractors into permanent employment. And currently, our direct job creation, as indicated on the slide that says the dashboard, our commitment on direct jobs, direct jobs is 529 that we're committing to this financial year. It's in that slide. The last but one slide. On the question of the total complement, I have the presentation that we presented in February at St. Helena Bay, we indicated that the group employee complement is 13,458, and of that, 1,290 vacancies exist. It was not the headcount, it's the complement. And we also committed that to say 50% of those vacancies are going to be converted into, of the fixed-term contractors, will be converted into permanent employment. We are not in conflict with our numbers. The relationship with the Air Force, I believe that initially we did have a problem with the Air Force, and our relationship was not a cordial one, in a sense that you are right, the SAA was seen to be poaching from the Air Force in offering better benefits for the pilots and better remuneration. We don't have that problem anymore. We are working on a collaboration. The problem that we, the partnership that we have at the moment, and we call it a partnership, is the Air Force has got access, an excess of number of pilots that they have trained. And this aid was part of what was agreed in the last financial year, that they have excess number, and we were going to agree that they were going to be with us for 75% of the time and still remain in the reserve with the Air Force for 25% of the time. So at the moment, I'm really confident and proud to say that we are collaborating on that. There has been a change in the leadership. We have been working with General Khakiano. I think his name is Khakiano. Yes, but I think one of his seniors is the one that has retired, and somebody else has come in. I'm sorry, I don't have the name right now. So that's really where we are. We're still very open. Once it's clarified, we are committed to the aid. Over and above the bursaries that we have launched, we are still committed to the aid, and we will take the aid in this financial year. Do you want to answer some of the questions? Okay. The training of the cadet pilots is a very long training. It takes 4 to 5 years in an 43rd training school in the Eastern Cape. It takes 4 to 5 years. It takes another 2 to 3 years for them to go into the feeder airlines to gain the experience and the required number of hours. You know, pilots are always measured in hours. So for them to gain that required number of hours, it takes up another 2 to 3 years. The cost per pilot, if they go to the 43rd, it costs anything between 3 to 4 million rand. It's a very expensive project to train the pilots. What we are doing at the moment is investigating establishing a flying academy, an SAA flying academy, where we can take people from matric, like these other 28 and 11 that we're referring to. However, because we're not in, our core competence is not fly, training people to fly. Our core competence is to fly. Passengers on as a commercial airline. We're looking at investigating getting support from some of our suppliers in Europe and also in the U.S. who have dealt with this, who can come and open an academy, and they can open a flying school for everybody. However, we'll have our special academy with our special standards and requirements for us to be able to train and fast-track. And the world of training pilots has changed. Where the new way is looking at the multi-pilot license. It's about multi-instrument now, the way that we're going to be training the new people going forward. So it's quite exciting area that we're going to be engaging in. However, we really also need funding, and we need support in terms of funding. Retired Air Force. As far as the operation in a commercial airline is concerned, as soon as people retire, in our environment, I can talk about what we know in our environment, the CAA regulations that says after a certain age, people cannot fly as commercial pilots. However, this new venture that we're investigating, the SAA Flying Academy, we're already identifying people who are actually passionate about transformation and training, and some of our training pilots to be part of that venture who can then transfer the learning and help us to bridge the training to a much shorter period compared to the traditional and longer period from the flying schools.
I think with regards to what Mama just said right now, Tuli, regarding the flight school, this is some of the things that we can just maybe engage in further regarding that, because with you acquiring new aircraft, there's a NIP obligation, and obviously that can be part of the thing that we can just make these aircraft manufacturers and say, you know what, for us to acquire your aircraft, this is what you need to give us a commitment to Africa, and that can be one of the ideas that we can also maybe just punt around. With regards to aging or aged pilots, when Mango started, most of them were like near retirement pilots at SAA or even at the Air Force who came into Mango. But obviously right now, Mango has grown to a certain stage whereby now I'm sure most of them have grown.
One last question around the free trade MOU.
You see, there are two questions there. The one is about the veterans absorption. The other one is about the retired, the whole collective. The significance of my question was, you know, cum input was that is there no desirability that they should be established a forum, called advisory forum, of all these oldies, let's call them that, who can, from time to time, come together and inspire, incubate these greenhorns that have just been trained. You know, so now the people have been listening. Newly trained cadet can glean some experience from these retired people. Not on a non-commercial basis, just to keep the oldies busy, but also for an indirect transfer of skills over and above the formalistic training that they shall have achieved. That was the significance.
I think it's really, really an excellent idea. It's all part of coaching and mentoring new cadets. We haven't thought about it, and thank you for the suggestion, something that we'll take into consideration.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Mukwena raised a question around the free trade MOU that was signed about 2 weeks ago, the Cape Town-Cairo MOU. I definitely agree with you. Hence, I said that part of the challenges that we have as an airline with our objective to get into the African continent is the liberalization of the skies. We continue to impress upon our government. Hence, I definitely agree with the Chair when he said that it's all about partnership. The reason why we raise some of these challenges is that the more we engage our government, as you know, opening skies is always a bilateral government-to-government relationship. We raise these challenges, and I definitely agree that I haven't seen the MOU, but part of that is air transportation is a key driver, you know, to trades between countries. I definitely would like to believe that that would have been included in that agreement, but one would certainly have to look into that. But definitely we continue to impress upon our government to see how best we can get help.
Well, more incisively, I think just go to the Minister of Trade, Professor Rob Davis, the minister, because he made a presentation there, and it just talks to him, so they just be proactive and empower ourselves. Yes.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mukwena. I mean, I can just highlight, for instance, one of the things that the recent DRC, South Africa Bilateral by National Commission, the South African ambassador invited us as an aviation community to try and establish what our requirements are as part of a compact that should be signed between the two countries. Hence, I'm saying we continue to do that, but I'll definitely take that invitation and obviously approach the department to try and see how best. Thank you.
One thing that has been a challenge for the Department of Public Enterprises and, if I may, Department of Transport, as the African government, the fact of the matter is we are challenged when you operate on the African continent. Basically, based on the legacy of the past and the fact that SA at times has a reputation in Africa of being very confrontational, and therefore countries in the region, in the continent, protect their markets largely. We've had the Yamoussoukro Declaration for a number of years, and like 25 years since maybe I was born, and still Africa is still non-liberated skies. We always react later than we should with regards to opening of the skies, and that remains our challenge. The other thing that we also have as a challenge in Africa, just in line with the aviation issue, the pushing of our skills, which has been mentioned as well. Though SAA Express still remain a cadet pilot feeder to SAA, they also have their own limitations with regards to their technicians being poached, either wanting to fix bigger airplanes or fly bigger airplanes. And the issue at hand right now is the fact that what SAA gains is SAA Express is lost. And I think that must also be taken into consideration at times as well. Not to maybe put the spanner in the works, but the challenge that both airlines face as well.
Thank you, Chair. If there are no further questions.
A rural ghost.
It's like to Kimberly.
Training facilities in East London, no, in Bela Bela. What I had referred to was that we had... through you, we have, as I said, we do have cadet pilots who are in our feeder airlines who come from deep rural areas of the Eastern Cape and in Limpopo. A lot of people coming from Venda as well and Zanin. That's what I mean in those areas, not necessarily the town, but in those areas. That's what I mean.
One of the leaders in SAA in February said, you know, they can't compete with other entities in terms of job creation. Theirs won't be you know, those big numbers that some entities are talking about. But we appreciate the fact that, you, especially on skills development, that you have the facilities and, you know, we should try to train as many people as possible. But also I'm glad to hear that you are trying to sort out the CETA challenges that are there. You know, so those really need to be sorted out so that, you know, because there's a lot of money that's lying there. We all complain about the money that's not being used, you know, and at the same time we complain.
$30 billion.
And at the same time we complain about skills challenges. You know, so I think that is encouraging to hear that you are engaged on ongoing basis to tap into this resources that are there. We want to thank you for honoring our invitation and your preparation, you know, for this meeting. We really appreciate it, and those who send apologies, tell them that we noted their apologies, and we wish you a safe trip back from wherever you'll be traveling to wherever you'll be traveling to. This then brings us to the end of this sitting of this portfolio committee. Thank you. Let me thank members as well and staff, the media, everybody. Thank you.